Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, The Sorting Hat and Other Trials, Finding Your Tribe in Speculative Fiction.
We should probably start by saying that just the other day, it was the 20th anniversary of the release of Harry Potter.
Yep.
The Philosopher's Stone, on a very small print run of just 500 copies.
Yeah. It was. I mean, the idea of the anniversary is brilliant, but also really terrifying because it made me realise that 1997 was 20 years ago.
Oh my god.
And 1997 is when I went off to university, so...
The day before the anniversary, I met Barry Cunningham. Well, I'd actually already met him, but I was at an event with Barry Cunningham when we chatted a little bit. And Barry Cunningham is the guy who picked up Harry Potter and who was responsible for the first book. And he made a joke about the fact that, you know, he, as with most children's writers at the time and now, he said basically, yeah, we want to publish this, but, you know, don't quit your day job. Which is very sensible advice.
Yeah.
And he laughed about how horrifically and grievously wrong he was. No, genuinely very, very nice guy, full of wonder. And it just made me realise that, wow, it started with something so small, just 500 copies. And here we are now with something that, whether you like it or don't, you cannot deny that it has had a profound effect on a lot of people and on the genre and in media.
Yeah, it's completely reshaped the young adult and the mid-grade genres.
Mm.
This is a broad umbrella term. They're really sort of book categories, I guess. But yeah, it's completely changed. It changed everything from what sort of fantasy got included, what sort of fantasy got looked for and published, and how long books became for children and young adults. Because before that, they thought that teenagers and preteens just couldn't concentrate on long books. So they tended to make them quite short. And you'll notice that the first couple of Harry Potter books are quite, you know, they're genuinely quite short by comparison to the later ones. And people just wanted more. They didn't care what length they were. And it proves that, you know what, book-loving children and teenagers, or just story-loving kids, really didn't care, as they wanted more of what they liked.
Yeah, but with Harry Potter, we're going to be talking about a particular thing and a particular theme that has really kind of stretched out into a lot of other books now, and it's about grouping.
Yeah, definitely.
Now I must ask Jules, what's your Hogwarts house?
Gryffindor. And that,
really?
That's from doing all the different tests and things. It's Gryffindor.
Yay! I too am a Gryffindor. I thought I was a Ravenclaw, but then I did all the tests and I came up with Gryffindor.
Yeah, apparently my leaning towards occasional reckless acts of, I suppose, courage, for lack of a better word, sort of tipped me over. Otherwise I'd have ended up in Ravenclaw. Alan's a Slytherin, which will surprise no one.
No.
Yeah, I didn't think it would.
No, my partner Sean is also a Gryffindor, so there you go, we're meant for each other. Not that I'm saying a Gryffindor and a Slytherin can't be, but
no, by canon they kind of are meant for each other as well, weren't they? Because Gryffindor and Slytherin were best friends until it all went horribly wrong and they started trying to kill each other,
and then Slytherin started trying to, you know, kill pupils with giant snakes.
Yeah. But, you know, moving all of that aside, the glorious future. yeah, it's really interesting that having the sorting hat for school houses, and I had houses at my school. I was actually a house captain. I'm that big a nerd. So... you know, I spent 4 years of senior school as a prefect, which, you know, if you want to throw things at me in the street, that's fine, I'll understand. But you know, it wasn't a new concept, and perhaps it didn't strike me in the same way as it did for children who, like actual children who came to the books, because I was in my 20s when the books came out. I was in my 20s when I got handed the books by my youngest sister, who was 11. And yeah, it was just bizarre how people sort of really cottoned on to the houses for me, because we still had houses. But people who were educated in state schools didn't necessarily have houses in the same way.
No. And I remember I had a sports house, and it was weird because everyone got these notions that each of the sports houses had different things. So it was like, oh, that house is good at sports. Because it wasn't just for sports, it was for everything in general, kind of. So that house is good at sports, and that house is very good at art, and that house has sort of got all the academics in it, and that house... like, but of course that was nonsense. It was totally random. It wasn't like the headmaster sat down and went, look at these children's qualities. I shall divide them into teams. They just went, okay, yeah, just throw them in a sports team. Just give them a colour.
Yeah, weirdly, that was something that we had as well. I mean, we had three houses because it wasn't a huge school. And they were saints. So it was Benedict's, Dominic's and Ignatius. And I was the house captain for Benedict's. And Dominic's and Benedict's were constantly at war for who won the sports cup. Ignatius didn't really get a look in. No, I think that might have been just because they had a few pupils in the more senior classes who just tried to get out of sports no matter what.
Yeah.
And it pulled everyone else back, and the Ignatius team captain wasn't terribly into sports either. So, you know, that's how that came about. It must have been really frustrating for the girls in that house who really did like sport.
Yeah.
Because they didn't get an outlet in the same way.
All of our houses were named after famous explorers who went to one of the poles. So we had Shackleton, Amundsen, Scott and Nansen. And I was in Amundsen. And when we started out, Shackleton won every sports day. And it was this entire thing about Shackleton always winning, and everyone wanted to beat Shackleton. And then Amundsen won, and then Amundsen kept winning. And then I think maybe Nansen started, and it was this, but it was this weird thing which was like, oh yeah, the Shackletons, everyone was against Shackleton. And one day we had a Harry Potter day at school, and we were given all of the houses based on our colour, because they were the same colours. So I was in a Munson, which was yellow, so we were Pufflepuff. And I remember looking up and saying, but no, you're wrong, Shackleton are clearly Slytherin. You know, they are... conniving, overachieving, and I was just looking, and Scott, who were the red ones, they were the Hufflepuffs, because they were actually the kind of well-rounded sort of nice people, and Nansen were full of all the academics, so I was there like, so they should be Ravenclaw. And it was just this weird mentality where just because we were assigned a colour, we suddenly had this real sense of who these people are and who those people are and what their qualities are, which was nonsense, because it was just based by year, and it was complete luck.
Yeah, it was where your name fell on the register a lot of the time.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it was funny because we had the House Cup as well, which was every year.
Yeah.
And we did have the weekly, it's sort of like a weekly House Cup. And what that came down to was how many house points you'd got that week. So yeah. Really like Harry Potter. And you could get house points for everything from really good pieces of homework to being particularly helpful. This is where people start saying, it sounds like I went to school in the 1950s. But things like good conduct, good presentation, so not being caught with your socks around your ankles, for example. And believe it or not, that was a thing. And being really quick and helpful with things like cleaning the classroom on a Friday afternoon before you went home. Because we had to clean our own classrooms. They thought it was very character building.
Clearly.
I know, it's nuts, isn't it? And obviously you got house points deducted. I mean, part of the job of the house captains was to do a weekly total of house points, because we didn't have magical... we didn't have magical hourglasses with gemstones in them. But to do the weekly house points tally... and then deduct from it any black marks that were given. If you got given a black mark, that was worth a deduction of 3 house points. So if you had a few students who got black marks that week for bad behaviour or not turning in homework, then you could find yourself going down. And it started that entire process that you do see in Harry Potter, whereby you have students who start losing the entire house, their points and their lead, and everybody turns on them, and not in a bullying type way, but in a sort of you need to get your act together kind of way.
Yeah, which I guess is smart in some ways because, you know, I laugh about the group mentality kind of thing, but you do get this sudden camaraderie because suddenly you're all in it together. It's very, oh God, I've just forgotten the word, the C word, the dreaded C word. You know, have in Russia and China. Not that C word, the other
communism.
C word. Yes, that's it. Communism. It's communism in action. You all have to do it together. It all counts together you all do it well, you all get rewarded kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a sense of, you know, when perhaps somebody or a couple of people in a class misbehave so everybody gets detention?
Yeah.
And there's evidence that that's actually not a very effective method of correcting behaviour.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, really.
And I don't think the same can be said for an entire group being made to work together as a team in order to compete against each other, because that seems to be good as long as it doesn't turn nasty.
But I think that the element comes in rather than when it's punishment, it's when there's reward.
Yeah, it's definitely carrot over stick, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it is interesting, and looking back at it, I'm, you know, tongue-in-cheek, have a bit of a laugh, because at the time it seemed quite important, and, you know, as a house captain, you're kind of second only. This makes me sound like a complete nerd and idiot, by the way, but I'm telling you how it was at my school.
Yeah.
Basically, the house captains were second only to the head girl. And you'd have the younger girls who felt they couldn't go and talk to a teacher about things. They'd come and talk to the house captain or their house captain.
Yeah. So it makes sense.
This really bizarre sort of feudal system within your school.
But that is still present in a lot of schools today, to be honest.
They are. I don't know if they're enforced. I mean, I went to a state primary school. But I didn't go to a state secondary school, obviously. I was sent to a convent school. And I think it was enforced a bit more rigorously there than perhaps it is in state schools.
Yeah.
And perhaps a single-sex education again.
Yeah. No, I quite agree. But so, actually, there is a thing that we kind of do like to be, even as individuals, even when we are individuals, we kind of like to be placed into things.
Yeah, you might not like the people on your team, but you will accept the people on your team over people who are not in your team if that mindset is created for you.
Yeah. And we like to be boxed into places. We like to say, oh, I'm this, I'm that. I mean, an excellent example is horoscopes, right?
Yeah.
Is that people just go, oh, I'm a Capricorn. They're like, oh, typical Capricorn behaviour. I don't know. What is typical Capricorn behaviour? What year are you born in? I'm the year of the monkey. Well, obviously, look at those shoes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we don't talk about the Chinese horoscope for me.
Why not?
Because I am the year of the goat, which I find inappropriate. So we don't talk about it.
You could say it's the year of the ram.
That's even worse. A ram is a sheep. I don't care that in Chinese mythology, sheep are supposed to be really mystical and artistic and sensitive. That's all hogwash as far as I'm concerned.
Hogwash. I am actually born in the year of the monkey. And so is my father.
Weirdly, that doesn't surprise me. About you, not your father. I don't know your father well enough to comment.
Well, my father is a monkey, you see. He's not. just wanted to clarify that in case anyone took me seriously. But we do. We like to be placed, and we like to kind of have this sort of special... It makes us feel special. It makes us connect with other people. And I think it's really successful in books because everyone loves to read those books and think, what would I be?
Yeah, or, you know, within their own heads, they're picking something. I mean, conversely, feeding into this human need for tribalism, you could also potentially really isolate people.
Yeah.
Because there are some people who just don't fit in any of the boxes.
Yeah.
And I can really identify with that because I spent a lot of my life not really fitting into any proper boxes on a lot of levels.
I agree with you. And I think that actually, whereby when fiction works, it's when they manage to find something which everyone is kind of going to sort of fit into.
Yeah. There's a place for yeah. everybody. There's no one on the outside. But I mean, Harry Potter particularly just really clicked into this mindset, this sort of intrinsic need for tribal, for your own tribe, as it were.
Mm.
That's something that then was echoed in certainly young adult fiction, and still is to a certain extent.
Yeah, it was. This is one thing, was in talking about needing to appeal to everyone, sort of be able to say, I could fit into this, this is my tribe. The problem with at least the first few books of Harry Potter was that the houses were the good guys, the bad guys, the smart ones, and miscellaneous.
Yeah, and I can kind of get that. And it obviously gets developed, and I don't think that was necessarily a misstep. That was kind of like, well, he's still a child. He doesn't realise that things are not black and white.
Yeah, and it obviously is seen through Harry's eyes and from his experiences. So, of course, he wants to be in Gryffindor. He thinks Gryffindor's great because that's where Ron is. And that's where Ron's family is.
Yeah. You know? And his experience with the Wizarding World is very limited, isn't it? It's like, well, I've only, you know, these people have been kind to me, therefore I want to go where they are.
Yeah, and he never at any point goes Gryffindor, Gryffindor. He just says not Slytherin.
Yeah, but at the end of the series, obviously, he's telling his, I mean, let's ignore the cursed child for now. He's telling he's telling his son that, you know what, if you turn out to be in Slytherin, that's okay.
Yeah, so Merlin was technically a Slytherin. Everyone keeps forgetting that.
Yeah, it's a really nice sort of, well, complete circle, isn't it? It's kind of like, well, I've gone from being an 11-year-old boy to being a man in his 30s who has the full understanding of an adult behind him after all these terrible things have happened to him, obviously.
Yeah, but that was a deconstruction of the sort of this house thing, because actually, I guess at the end, and in some ways it upsets me that you don't really get a lot of Slytherins at the end who are sort of helping to defend Hogwarts. But I mean, the message at the end was, it doesn't matter what house you're in, at the end of the day, they are all Hogwarts.
That was the thing I found particularly ironic, because at the end, you've got the Sorting Hat itself, obviously, saying for the last few books, by the way, guys, it's time to start working together. You know, I might be a hat, I might be singing it to you, but I'm actually quite worried, I'm anxious. And then by the end of the last book, you've got Voldemort literally saying, we will sort people until there is only one house, and that house will be Slytherin. There will be nothing else. That will be the only thing I accept. And anybody who doesn't fall into that will basically get rid of them. So essentially, you've got the good side that want people to work together a bit more, and you've got the bad side who kind of want everybody to be together, but in completely different ways.
Yeah.
So they essentially want to get rid of the divisiveness of the house system.
Yeah, but then the idea is that it's not that they want to bring everyone together, it's that they only want one kind of person.
Yeah, and anyone who falls outside of that...
dies.
Yeah, probably. Dies. Is not worth anything. Voldemort is essentially trying to create an Aryan race without it being an Aryan race.
Yeah.
That's all he's interested in. He doesn't actually want to spill wizard blood as such, as long as everybody obeys.
Yeah, he's just being... a wizard Nazi.
Yeah. He is effectively Hitler.
He is.
So that's really interesting. Whereas, obviously, from the Sorting Hat and Dumbledore's perspective, it's kind of like, well, everybody has value within their own separate groups, but they don't have to be separate in the sense of, you know, there should be healthy competition, but at the same time, you should all be working together. You should all be remembering that you're all part of each other.
Yeah.
As well. Although, with Dumbledore, you do have to raise an eyebrow and say, yes, but you keep overturning their punishments and giving them extra house points so that they win every year.
I mean, to be honest, he only really does that in the first book.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is kind of deserved. They did deserve those points after everything they went through.
Yeah, there's definitely an argument to say that they did, but I think that's the one thing that felt the tiniest smidgen contrived, perhaps.
Yeah, but it was a book for 8 to 11-year-olds at the time, so...
Yeah, in theory. It was like, let's see the unfairness work in favour of us for once.
So we all like to be placed. And this goes again in another very popular children's series, which is the Percy Jackson books.
Yeah.
Now, again, the placement they do in that is depending which one of your parent, which god your other parent was.
Yeah.
So they have all of these houses, and all of the houses have got different qualities.
I'll and take your word for it, because I've obviously never read the books.
Oh, yeah, okay, sorry. So yeah, you've got the sort of the 12 houses. So there's for the children of Athena, the children of Ares, and then there's these three in the middle, which is the children of Zeus, the children of Poseidon, and the children of Hades. And they're not supposed to have kids, so those three are empty. And the premise is that Percy Jackson is actually the son of Poseidon.
Yeah.
So he starts off in the Hermes cabin, which is where everyone starts off before they get claimed, or if they never do get claimed. And I like the idea that Hermes is just like, yeah, all right, come on. Okay. And then he does get claimed, and it's kind of lonely for him because he's in this big cabin and he's on his own and he's lost that kind of group feel, which he had before.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing, however, is the way that it created this competition, which is that he butts heads with a character named Annabeth, who is the daughter of Athena. And Athena and Poseidon traditionally do not get along. So they're kind of, I mean, obviously it's also their parents, but neither of them have ever met their parents. So they're kind of just against one another at the beginning. They kind of become friends, but they're just against one another at the beginning.
Yeah.
Literally because of what house they're in and who they represent. Even though, what loyalty do they have to these people? They've never met them.
Yeah. In the same way, I suppose, that you've got Gryffindor against Slytherin.
Yeah. Though there's kind of, you can understand that because they do sort of, they kind of irk each other a little bit, don't they? The actual students.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's that. And I do recommend the Percy Jackson series. I think it's a very, very good set of children's books.
See, I have actually got the ebook copies of it. It's just, I've never got around to them.
I think you'd like it.
So at some point I will do.
So moving into YA books, hit it.
Divergent, once again, basically on their, it's almost like their day of becoming an adult at 16.
Mm-hmm.
They choose which group they're going to belong to, and there's six different groups within this sort of dystopian self-enclosed landscape, and yeah, they're all based on what your most dominant trait is. So there's amities for the people who are more about interconnectedness and compassion, for example.
Yeah.
There's verity for those who believe in ruthless truthfulness, and usually that tends to make them quite intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
There's dauntless for those who have courage. Abnegation for those who are selfless.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple more that I can't actually remember. I don't think they played quite such a big part. But yeah, it's six altogether, and you're really only, what they basically do, they shoot you up with this serum.
Mm-hmm.
Which causes hallucinations, and that gives you the clue as to what house, sorry, there you go, see? Which group you belong to.
Yeah.
And you're only really supposed to belong to one. But Triss, the main character, discovers that she has the potential to belong to three. She's divergent. So she doesn't actually fit with any one, so she really genuinely has a choice. And she chooses Dauntless. And the first book's very good. It's quite gritty, and she's a good character, and it's interesting the way they go about it. I think the problem came in was it was written probably to be a standalone.
Yeah.
And then was massively popular, and another two books were hurried out, including the dreadful third book. I mean, when you think about it, dividing people just based on one dominant personality trait is utterly ludicrous. But
yes,
it worked in the first book. Unfortunately, it doesn't keep your attention in the same way for, say, the second book, and definitely not for the third book. So by the third book, you're going, hang on, this is ridiculous. This is just ludicrous. You can see why she would want to move away from abnegation, though, because abnegation is like some of the fundamentalist sects of religions where, you know, they're very plain in their dress, and, you know, the women tend to keep long hair, which is braided.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look in the mirror more than once a month because that's vain. And it's all about being selfless And Triss has never felt she completely fits there, even though she does agree with some of the principles of abnegation.
Hmm. So that's where she was born?
Yeah, that's okay. Where she started off.
And what's the other house she almost fits into?
I
said the same thing!
I'm going to look this up now because it's going to do my head in. Right. I'm pretty sure it's the truth one, but I could be wrong. That hasn't actually told me what I want to know. Ah, they're called factions as well, so that helps.
Factions.
Yeah, it's candor. So there's dauntless, amity, erudite. It's erudite that she would have belonged in. So the erudite are known for being very, very intelligent.
Yeah.
Candor for honesty, but they, you know, can be inconsiderate. Abnegation. Amity. So there you go. That's all of them.
Good. Now, moving away, you mentioned that whether actually having people split off dependent on one kind of quality within them was actually a good idea or not. And it does come into the conversation of social diversity. And do we actually work better as a society when we have lots and lots of different kind of viewpoints and ideas and opinions and morals working into play at the same time? And does the house kind of system, this sort of faction system, create an us and them mentality?
I think potentially it can do. That's the danger with tribalism. The great thing about tribalism is it gives you a place to belong.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how much of an oddball you are, if a group of people tell you you belong and accept you, then you belong.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, in order to have a tribe, you must have something outside the tribe, otherwise it's just inclusive, and that does create a them and us, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you can't have different tribes who work together and have affiliations, but that usually only happens, and certainly historically has only happened, after there's been wars and people have killed a lot of people from the other tribe and vice versa.
Yeah.
And then you would then have intermarriages and things like that to form the alliances. So it is extremely problematic.
So do you think that we as people are kind of... is it a natural instinct to create this tribe and therefore this kind of us and them mentality?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at... if you go into biology, anthropology... any of the more sort of physiological type sciences, we are wired that way. If you look at chimps, for example,
mm-hmm.
or bonobos, they are, again, wired like us to form little tribes, and actually within wider tribes to form gangs within those tribes. Not the bonobos so much, but certainly, you know, teenage chimps forming gangs together. And they're horrific, really, really horrific generally in their behaviour. So, yeah, we are definitely wired up to go that way. And when we're most wired to go that way is when there is a threat, when there's time of insecurity. In our case, it tends to come about when there's times of political instability.
Mm.
So what we're seeing now, actually now, is groups of people starting to go down that slope of a them and us mentality rather than saying, no, actually, our real problems are our leaders.
Yeah.
Our real problems are what they are representing and the fact they're not representing us. The rest of us are all together. We're all one.
Yeah.
And instead, what people are starting to do is roll into small tribes again.
Hmm.
So without going too much into that, you can actually see it happening right now.
Yes, you can. Moving away from things which are potentially upsetting and uncomfortable. Speaking of gangs, I recently finished reading Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom by Leigh Bardugo. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
An excellent duology, highly recommended. And they do have sort of, it's about gangs. And actually, you're not introduced into the story whereby you're put into a gang. You are straight away within one.
Yeah.
And it's the Crows. Is that what they're called? They are called the Crows.
Yeah, it's part of the Crow Club.
Yeah, the Crow Club. The Dregs, that's it. That's what the group is called. They're called the Dregs. And they have a wide sort of diverse group of people. The sort of the little gang is made up of very, very different people, which I really, really liked. You know, you've got a whole selection. But the thing that binds them together, they all have different motives, they all have different flaws, they're very different people, different morals. Like, they all have different religions as well.
Yeah, they do. I think the thing that brings them together is the fact that they're misfits. And yes. I think that's what I especially liked about them as a gang, was the fact that, okay, necessity initially brings them together. They all want something at the end of these jobs that Kaz Brekker sets up. And Kaz himself really has a personal mission, a personal vendetta, actually.
Yeah.
But what keeps them together, and certainly by the end of the second book, you feel there's a real warmth and connectedness between them.
Yeah.
Even with Kaz, who doesn't want to admit he feels connected to anybody.
No, but the thing I do like about the character of Kaz Brekker is he's definitely the sort of, I hate you all. Make sure you wrap up warm before you go out. It's cold.
Yeah, he really is like that. And, his actions speak far louder than his words. His words are kind of like, I hate you and I don't care if you die tomorrow as long as you get the job done. But his actions are, oh, right, so you've been imprisoned. I guess we'll just take the palace apart looking for you then. And anyone who gets in the way is dead. But no, it's not because I like you or anything.
Yeah. It's like, would you come for me? I would literally crawl to come and save you. Because that's what we're supposed to do. Yeah. And I'm just admit that maybe you like these people. But yeah, I completely agree. It was a nice way of grouping because it was about saying this isn't about a group of people. The connection they had was that they were all these misfits.
Yeah, they're not set apart because they're special, because they've particularly got special powers. They're set apart because either they're illegal aliens in... they're not in their own homeland. They've got serious emotional or physiological problems, or really bad stuff has happened to them. Mm-hmm. And, they all earn their own place in the group with their own special skills as well.
Yeah.
Skills generally that they've had to work at and earn. Because even Nina, who's a heart render, who has magic, has had to work really hard, and there is a corresponding payoff to her using anything she's got.
Yes. There is.
Because I think if there's a downside to the Harry Potter houses, it's the squibs and the muggles, because you still have the chosen and the unchosen.
Yeah. And that is actually a really nice bit in the second book, where one of the characters, Inej, who she's based off a race which are very clearly sort of like the Romani people. Yeah. The traveling group, she was born an acrobat, and she faces off against someone who is trained, has got royal-esque blood, is supposedly superior in every kind of way, at least, claims to be. And there's a really nice little sentiment where Inej just thinks, but we're not all born special. We make ourselves special. We have to claw our way up. What about the normal ones? yeah. this is how we survive. And I really, really liked it because it was about saying they were ordinary people. Even the ones who have magic are ordinary people who have fought tooth and claw to survive and to make something of themselves. And that was a really, really nice sentiment because it's probably been a while since we've read anything which there wasn't this kind of you are the chosen one mentality. And that happens in Percy Jackson. He finds out he's Poseidon's son. It happens in Harry Potter. He is the chosen one. It's no, you weren't chosen for anything special. You were just there. You are here and now this is what you're doing.
Yeah, it's what you do with what you've been given.
Yeah.
And sometimes they make very bad decisions with what they've been given. Inej, in some ways, is the person who was handed the absolute worst deck of cards ever. Mm. Because she was perfectly happy with her family. And then she was kidnapped and sold to a brothel, which she survived for a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, she was trafficked as a sex slave.
Yeah.
And somehow she comes through all of that with dignity and with, you know, her sense of morality intact. The fact she then goes on to become basically an assassin and a spy. But then
she's also the moral. Yeah, she's the moral character of one of the moral characters of the story, though.
Yeah, she is the moral conscience of that group,
which is really funny.
But then I think in some ways she's in the best position to be one because she's been through hell. Kaz has been through hell, but Kaz has stayed there. Inej has come out the other side.
Kaz is still in hell. Inej survived it.
Yeah, definitely. So it is a really interesting group, and they sort of rub the rough edges off each other and complement each other in equal measure.
Yeah. And I did really, really like that. The whole kind of misfits thing. Which I guess sort of comes into the sense of the, you know, the Lost Boys almost. The people who fell through the cracks who come together to create something.
Yeah, nobody else wants us, but it's okay, we want each other.
Yeah, and it's about creating that this big trend that you see at the moment, which is that it's not about the family you're born with, it's about the family you create.
Yeah, definitely. I know every couple of weeks I mention Tamora Pierce, but this is a different series.
Okay.
It's her Circle series, and basically the four children who are brought together, they do have abilities, but they're unconventional and they have been allowed to fall through the cracks. They've been forgotten. They are the forgotten children, effectively. Mm-hmm. And you've got Briar, who was a street boy, and he was about to be sent to the colonies because he'd been caught thieving three times.
Yeah.
And Daja, who, again, based off a Romani tribe, has been made outcast by her people so they won't catch her bad luck because all her family died in an accident. And as the only survivor, she's been called Tranchi, which means outcast. So her entire people have rejected her. Sandri, who is actually a noble born, but mm-hmm. a smallpox epidemic happened where her family was staying, and her nurse concealed her in a hidden room, and then everyone forgot she was there, so she was left there with all the corpses piled outside, and she couldn't get out.
Okay.
Made her basically unfit to be part. Well, but before that, her education would have made her unfit to be much to do with any noble family. So she's just alone. And Triss, I think, perhaps has the saddest story of all in some ways, because she has a family, a very successful merchant family, who couldn't find a use for her. So they passed her around from relative to relative, and everywhere she went, she was told she wasn't worth anything and that nobody wanted her. And she was made to act basically as a servant in different houses, always living in terror that someone eventually was going to throw her away and she's going to run out of relatives, which is what happens. Eventually they stick her in a convent, and then the convent say they don't want her either because weird stuff happens around Triss. So again, it's this sense of, okay, nobody's chosen you for anything. It doesn't matter that you might have special abilities, which they don't know about to start with.
Yeah.
They are put in the care of two women who are actually lovers, who then gradually bring these children out of themselves, who find a family that's completely unconventional. I mean, they have effectively got two foster mothers, and they adopt each other as foster brother, foster sisters. And, you know, it's one I keep coming back to and rereading, because it's so lovely the way it's done. I mean, there's lots of very unlovely stuff that happens in those books. They go, again, they all go through hell, but they come out stronger because of this group that they become part of.
Mm. And I think maybe actually the reason why this has a more warm feel to it is that these are the kinds of people, because they are outcast, because they have been pushed, who will welcome others.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And who would welcome others who came to their door and said, we need help, or we have nowhere to go.
I mean, they might make a big show of doing it grudgingly, or being grumpy, or just not having the social niceties, but you can trust what they say. They will get stuff done.
Yeah, exactly. And again, sort of going back to sort of Six of Crows, Kaz Brekker is the one who recruits them all. One by one, he recruits them all. And he plays it off like they're all disposable. But they aren't. And there's this element of you have been chosen, whilst also, when things go awry and more people end up kind of in on it as well, he doesn't go, no, kill them, get rid of them. They just become part of the group.
Yeah.
So I think that we're moving away now from this kind of classification back into this misfit group, which has always been very popular, but I think it's coming back around again.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the idea of found families is really important.
Mm, I agree.
It is actually a theme in Harry Potter when you think about it, because, Ron comes from a large family and generally they all sort of get on with each other, but it shows that you can have fractures within a family.
Yeah.
Quite clearly. And obviously his relationship with Harry and Hermione isn't always untroubled. But I think by the end, they're all closer than family anyway.
Yeah, they are. And it is the adoption of family, again, that you don't need to have been born to a place to become a member of the family. I mean, Harry's basically adopted by the Weasleys.
Yeah. Which parallels Sirius being adopted by Harry's parents. And Harry's dad's parents.
Yes, sorry, I was confused for a minute.
I don't mean literally adopted. He hates being with the Blacks, and he just
and the
ends
Potters
up pretty much living with the Potters.
I just like the idea that Sirius turns up at James and Lily's door and just goes, I'm lonely, and they're like, all right, you'll be our son now. Come in.
That's weird. Yeah.
You're the same age as us, but whatever. To be honest, it wouldn't actually, if J.K. Rowling came out and said that, yeah, they adopted Sirius, I wouldn't actually be that surprised. So yes, do you have any more books or series that you feel have really kind of created that tribal kind of element in them?
I think there's probably loads. I haven't got any written down to discuss today. As we've said, I mean, we've already given some really good examples, I think. Mm. And it is that sort of found family that is the important element. And perhaps it's found family we should be emphasising over tribal mentality.
Yeah.
As fun as tribalism is.
Is it, Jules? But yeah, no, I agree. That actually, ultimately, the thing that is being created isn't this tribal element, it's the finding of one's people, of one's family.
Yeah. I mean, I do understand the draw of a tribal them and us mentality from a karate perspective, believe it or not, because I used to do an awful lot of competing, and I was on the Welsh squad for about 4 years, and after that I was on the British team, And there is something very enticing about being part of this group of people and wanting to go forward and win and all supporting each other. And sort of almost not setting yourself up with an arch nemesis, but someone that's like, no, those are the people we really need to beat. We don't care if we don't win overall, but those are the guys we're gonna beat. And there is a lot of fun involved in creating that them and us mentality. We used to, when I was on the Welsh squad, we used to particularly like knocking England about. It was a case of, okay, well, you either get disqualified or you win, was the attitude we went in with. That's not a great attitude, by the way, for karate or any martial art. But, you know, they gave as good as they got.
And then you were on the England team.
I was on the British team.
British team, sorry.
Yes, I was. I was actually the team captain, briefly.
Ah, there you go.
So, maybe sport is one of the few safe places we can still have that. Question
to
another day.
To a degree.
To a degree. I don't support a football team. I don't support a rugby team. I have to admit, I'm not terribly interested in rugby. Or football, for that matter. I'm not really a spectator when it comes to sport. No. God, no. Cricket could be improved if we just bashed everyone with a cricket bat.
Dark. And on that note...
On that note, we'll wrap it up for this week.
Leave us a comment telling us which houses you are in Hogwarts, or in which Divergent... What is it? What is
Fraction.
It? Fraction you are...
Faction. Fraction.
No! Tell us what fractions you are! Create more groups! I'm having a bad day, Jules. And on that note, catch you guys next week.
Thanks and goodbye.